Easter, Elaine.
Happy Easter, Mark.
It's Easter Sunday.
Great. You're saying that as if I should be doing something or saying something?
You know what that means.
What does it mean, Mark?
Cheap Easter eggs tomorrow.
I disagree. I think we have gone past the days where you can go to name a supermarket and get the cheap Easter eggs. For the last few years, that has not been happening. There've just been none there. I don't understand it.
I'm not calling bullshit on you, but I'm calling bullshit on you.
What time?
You don't get Easter eggs because you like about four Easter eggs, all of which are around Dairy Milk, which gets snapped up straight away.
I do like a Cadbury's egg.
For me, it's like Record Store Day. Like, it's all these weird things like peanut butter Kit Kat Chunky eggs. Yep, I'll have one of them, thank you.
Reese's. There's always Reese's left over.
I had about 14 Reese's Easter eggs last year because whenever I went back, there was just more and more coming off the shelves.
Orange Twirls.
Orange Twirls.
No one likes an Orange Twirl.
I do. I'll have one.
Okay.
Half and half Kit Kats. I'm looking forward to the ones. All the things that are still on the shelf today, yesterday, I'm looking forward to stocking up on tomorrow.
Fair enough. I retract my statement. There will be Easter eggs, just none that I like. But congratulations to you. I'm sure you'll have a lovely time. What time are you going to set off tomorrow to go to the shop to get the Easter eggs?
I don't know what time it opens, to be honest, because obviously it's closed today, the Asda near us.
Are you going to be sort of just standing outside with, peering in, looking to the aisle for the Easter eggs?
It's like Record Store Day, so quite possibly, yeah. Do you know what it is next week? Even more important than Easter.
I have no idea.
You do, because we've talked about it.
Well, if we have, it's now gone out of my brain.
It's WrestleMania next weekend.
Oh, it's WrestleMania next weekend. Oh, of course. Sorry, so chocolate and WrestleMania, the two best ways to start a podcast.
Something for you, something for me.
Yeah, and you're going to go to an all-night watch-along. Sorry, is that how you want me to describe it? A little watch-along?
I kind of wish you wouldn't have mentioned it, to be honest. I'm off to North Wrestling, which is our local wrestling, independent wrestling show, are putting on at Anarchy Brewery, where they run their events, are doing a showing of the wrestling. So I'm going to go along for night one, see what it's like. I was going to say I've never seen it with a crowd before, but I did last year.
You've seen it at WrestleMania with a crowd.
Yeah, I've never been to
it. But it's very different watching it on the telly, isn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah, just go along, a couple of pints. I've got some food on. So, yeah, it'll be good fun.
It'll be amazing. I think you'll love it.
See if Cody finishes the story.
Right. What story would that be, Mark? I didn't want to ask that. Yeah. Go on. What story?
So, last year, Cody Rhodes faced Roman Reigns for the title. We discussed this. We've had a whole podcast about it.
I'm sure we did.
And everyone expected him to win because it was the one... Roman Reigns is the WWE champion, and that's the one belt that his father, Dusty Rhodes, never won. And Roman Reigns beat him, which a lot of people found really funny. And so this year he is coming back to try and finish the story, and The Rock has come back, so messed up plans. I think we need to move on from this because your eyes are telling a story. You don't care. You're glazing over.
Mark's attempts to make this a wrestling podcast continue.
Watching television. So TV.
Telly.
What have you got?
I've got an ITV. Well, they're calling it a comedy thriller, which I don't agree with. But anyway, I've got an ITV drama.
The cornerstone of any great TV show.
Yes,
ITV.
Exactly.
I've got X-Men 97.
Okay, brilliant. Where's that on?
It's on Disney Plus.
Okay, so we've got a Disney Plus and an ITV. What do you want to do first?
I'll do X-Men 97 because I can do it pretty quickly.
All right, go for it.
Did you watch the original? You're going to sing the song now, aren't you?
I'm ready. I've got the microphone. It's quite hard to sing.
The iconic X-Men animated series that ran from 93 to 96. Did you watch any of it?
Yeah, I watched all of it. I had a book. I had like one of those... like annuals, but it wasn't hardbacked, it was softbacked, and it was like big, it was a big annual, and it had lots of cartoons in it, and then it also had profiles of the different people. I loved that book.
So, and I was gonna say, but we were a bit old for it, weren't we? Apparently not.
I really enjoyed it, and who knows why, maybe you'll go on to explain, but there was something about that animated series, given that I'm not a fan of animation, particularly like in my adult life, there was something about it that really And when you mention it, like, automatically, like I've just done, you sing the song. Everyone knows the song.
Everyone knows the song. And if you watch any of the films, when they do the Fox thing, they put a little bit of the theme. And it's been used in a lot of the Marvel TV shows and films when they reference mutants. Like a subtle score thing will do the...
A little sting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's obviously iconic. I got into it a little bit late once we got Sky. I think it was repeated on Fox Kids or something like that. And it always used to be the Days of Future Past episodes or the Dark Phoenix, which are obviously two of the really important storylines. Mm. And I must have seen them about 20 times. So this is a continuation of that TV show. It's large. A lot of the voice actors are the same. The animation style's the same. They have the same, largely the same opening credits with a few tweaks. And I went into it thinking, oh, I know everything. I did not see the last series of that show, apparently, because a lot of things have changed.
Okay.
But it carries on straight away. It's quite unapologetic in that it just comes in, you're dropped in the middle. Mm-hmm. A character who died in the pilot. Because I've tried to do rewatches of this and got bored halfway through, because I think it is quite heavy-handed with its, hey, look, mutants. They're treated badly by society. I wonder what that could mean.
Yeah, okay.
I've tried. There's loads of little Easter eggs in there, which I quite enjoy, but I've never managed to get further than maybe episode 4. But a character who dies in the first episode of the first series of the original show is, like, back. And I had no idea that he came back in later series, but apparently he did. Spoilers for a 30-odd-year-old TV show.
Oh, now you made me feel
Professor
old.
X dies at the end of the original series.
Okay.
I suspect he isn't dead because I think
they make him die in various iterations of the films as well, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are left with a whole new world of what do the X-Men do going forwards? Who takes over as the head of the X-Men? Is it Cyclops? Is it someone else? I expected this to be utter shite.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's good.
Okay. What would you say then?
But it's definitely watchable. It's definitely watchable. And that's, I think if I was a kid, I'd absolutely bloody love this.
That's not a massive step up from shite. I thought you were going to say, I expected this to be shite and it's brilliant. But
No. It's good nostalgic watching. I'm not going to say it's going to change the world because it absolutely isn't. And it's, if I was a kid, I think I would enjoy this as much as I enjoyed the X-Men growing up. And I think it's a different landscape now. I think there's a lot more very, very good cartoons about. Mm. And I think this stands up against anything else that's out in the animation world at the minute. It is still a cartoon version of the X-Men. And we're going to see some X-Men come into the MCU soon, so it's interestingly timed. You've just rolled your face there.
I did a little curl of the lip because I'm a bit sick of the MCU and I'm not sure how I feel about these characters coming in and mixing in. But anyway, that's by the by. That's my prejudice
okay.
placed on the podcast.
But yeah, I think it's absolutely fine. And if you say to someone, oh, we're going to bring back a much-loved 25-year-old animated TV show, I think It's Perfectly Fine is as good as you're ever going to get. So, yeah, if you're struggling for something to do for 20 minutes, just pop on an episode because they're actually all right.
How long are they?
If you're struggling for something to do for 20 minutes, pop on an episode because... How long do you think they might be?
I think they might be 20 minutes. They're quite short then.
Well, I mean, the standard cartoon length, aren't they? So
I don't know. I don't watch standard cartoon. I don't watch any cartoons. But yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for answering my question so well.
Wow. So good I answered it twice.
That's right.
So what's your paragon of great TV?
So I don't think I've done an ITV drama for a while, so I'm quite pleased I've got one for the podcast. I've been like Disney Plusing and Appling and all of that sort of stuff. So this is Passengers, starring Wumni Masaku, who I think you will know mostly from Loki, where she's Hunter B15.
I know, yeah, I know her very well.
So you know her well.
I've seen her picture on the Sky Q.
Yes, yeah, and I know her really well as well. She's been in loads of stuff. I remember her from Luther. Obviously, I know her from Loki. And she's just got a list and list of, you know, lots of different things.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really pleased that she's back on our TV screens in the lead role of a detective who has been at the Met for a number of years, but has now returned to her hometown of Chadder Valley in the north. So a northern town of Chadder Valley, where she is pretty bored dealing with bins going missing. You know, the recycling bin, the green bin, the blue bin, the red bin, and cats as well. So nothing's really happening.
Does
in
Timothy
this
Dalton
time.
Run a supermarket?
Yeah, it is. Oh, I'm so, yeah. I'm so pleased I get to talk to you about this. A cast of characters involving people like David Threfel.
Men of the world.
Funnily enough. And lots of other people. So just imagine a small northern town with lots of different characters in it. There's fracking going on. There are protests. There's weird things happening in the forest. All sorts of things occurring in this drama, which is why people are calling it like a comedy and then a comedy thriller. It's really, really difficult to place. There is a supernatural element at the heart of it. Something has been released, but we don't know what.
Sorry, that was just me going, switching off there.
I know. And then we've got police station hijinks. We've got lots of really, you know, witty northern dialogue. We've got young people who just want to get out of the town. Relationships that, you know, are very toxic. Between a younger woman and her boyfriend who cheats on her and beats up her other friend just because he's a boy and he's talking to her. You know, there's all these sort of pockets of different things going on. And yeah. I forgot, there's another one. There's a guy who's just got out of prison. He's meant to be in prison for 10 years, but he's got out after 5 and everyone's scared of him and we don't really know what he's done. That's sort of the lay of the land. And then, like I say, into the middle of this, we haven't seen what's out there, but the suggestions, there's black gloop in the forest, things have been ripped apart, someone opens up a truck and there's a great big hole as if something's got out of it.
These sound like two different TV shows.
It's lots of different TV shows. So you've brought up Edgar Wright and Hot Fuzz.
55 Degrees North also comes to mind.
Yeah. There is a line in the second episode where the person who's employing Wumi Misaka's character, who's, I think, called Rhea, her sort of boss says, "It's not Broadchurch," which I'll come back
that's
to that
brave.
In a moment. But yeah, so there's all sorts of, other people have compared it to Stranger Things and Happy Valley, and there's just all of that mixed up. The thing that I keep saying I'm going to come back to is the fact that this is written by Andrew Buchan, who was in Broadchurch. He's the dad from Broadchurch, and he's been in lots of other things as
okay.
well. So you'll know him from telly. He knew Wumi Misaku. He went to RADA with her, and I think they were in the same year, and he had her in mind for this role. I think this is incredibly knowing. I think it knows that it's a bit of this and a bit of that. And as I understand it, he's written in the Radio Times to say, you know, I am not necessarily borrowing, but it's knowing. I know what I'm doing. I'm wanting to take and pay tribute to these different shows, but setting it in the north, which is where he's from, and giving nods to that area and the way that people speak and the way that people have relationships with each other in the north. I went into this thinking, obviously people calling it a comedy, so straight away I was off. But I went into this thinking, what's this going to be? This ITV drama, that's tonally all over the place. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm genuinely really enjoying it. I think you have to place all of these things to one side. You have to go, okay, it's a bit of this, it's a bit of that. But the characters I find interesting. I've been sort of swept along with what's happening in the forest. There's a bit of PTSD flashbacks for some of the characters. I still don't know what the baddie who's come out of prison's done. And I'm on episode 2, so there's lots of things that are open. Who knows where it's going to go? But I think if you're looking for something to stick on on a, let's say, a Saturday night when your husband's out at the wrestling. And you don't want something that's too taxing, but you'd like a little bit of a mystery. And you like Happy Valley and Stranger Things and Hot Fuzz and all of these shows. And you just want to sit and see where it goes. A bit like what I was doing on Saturday night. Then give it a go. I just don't think that there's anything wrong with it. I think you just, you know, go with the flow, see where it goes to. It's not going to be the sort of thing that I sit and think about, you know, for hours on end. I'm not going to start analysing, you know, parts of it in, you know, as I'm going out for a walk and thinking, well, wow, what were they trying to say with that? But for a show that, you know, when you just want to stick something on and enjoy it, that's what I'm doing with Passenger. I'm enjoying it. And I like also the fact that it's written by an actor. I can see, you know, the dialogue's really good.
Always the cornerstone of a great film.
No, but I really do think the dialogue's really good. And I like the genesis of where it's come from. And yeah, I'm just really enjoying it. And I think that's okay, isn't it? You can just have shows that you just go, yeah, all right. I'm just enjoying that.
Yeah, see, it's fine. Yeah. Like, same as X-Men 97.
Exactly.
Not going to change the world.
That's it.
It's good to put on when you've got...
Perfect.
When your wife's out at... What? Wherever you were. A writing retreat.
Where am I going? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm at a writing retreat and yeah. You're at wrestling.
Yeah.
That shows various things in our life.
Shows what we do, yeah. Shall we talk about films?
I'd love to talk about...
Or a film.
I'd love to talk about the film with you.
Okay. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? When you're hugging with your baby, last row in the balcony.
Hey, Mark.
You're going to say busting makes me feel good, aren't you?
Well, I was going to ask you if there was something strange in the neighbourhood who you were going to call, but we could do busting makes you feel good if you like.
I'm not going to call anything because ghosts bustin don't exist.
Makes me feel good. Oh, it's such a good line, though. Do, 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 do. I do believe in ghosts, so there we go. I don't think we should say that we shouldn't believe in them because then they'll hear.
No, because
and then they'll haunt us even more. They might, though. They just might.
So, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. The fourth in the...
Who knows? Who knows?
Fourth
what
film
do you count?
Plus, well, I count Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters
2,
Ghostbusters Afterlife, and Ghostbusters this one.
Mm.
I think Ghostbusters Answer the Call lives in a totally different
world. In a different
world.
Universe, yeah.
A failed attempt at a reboot, I think it was.
I agree. And not because it was all women in the cast. I didn't find it funny. I didn't like the fact that it had gone off into an alternate universe.
I had no problem with it being an alternate universe. I think it just the script wasn't up to par.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fault of the actors.
No.
I really wanted it to be good.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because dickheads didn't.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a shame. But I really enjoyed Afterlife, which this is a follow-up to, where we got to meet the Spengler family, Egon's daughter and sort of her children, and then at Paul Rudd's Gary Gruberson, the science teacher, doing summer cover. And I really, really enjoyed that. I gave that 4 stars, didn't I?
You did.
And
I gave
you
it
did
2.
Not. You gave it 2.
I just, I had to fence it early.
I really wonder whether that will come into play when we start to talk about how you feel about this film. So I was much more, and that makes sense, doesn't it? I was much more inclined to go into this with an open mind because I had enjoyed Afterlife. I enjoyed those characters. What about you? Did you, because you gave it 2 stars, because you didn't enjoy the last one, did you think, oh, I really don't want to go and see this?
So the truth is I went into this not having a clue about what I thought about Afterlife because it's not a film that I've thought about probably since we stopped recording that podcast. I couldn't remember that. I remembered that Paul Rudd was in it. I remembered, couldn't remember Carrie Coon. Remembered Finn Wolfhard. Didn't remember McKenna Grace. Was one of the...
Oh, really? Because I think she was a bit of a breakout star from that film.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And then didn't remember the two tag-alongs that I believe, I remember Lucky just got completely nothing to do in the second half of that film, and podcast, as I've listened to our podcast, podcast annoyed me, whereas you found him quite charming.
I thought he was quite sweet, yeah.
So this film inexplicably moves the action to New York just so that they can use the fire station set.
Which we've been to.
We have, we have.
We stood opposite
gingerly trying to take a photo.
Photos while actual fire people were stood there smoking cigarettes outside, weirdly, and just going, oh, God, not these people again. Oh, here they come.
Here they come.
Here come the tourists.
Get the merchandise out.
But yeah, we're back in New York.
Back in New York. Ghostbusters is now a proper thing that's looking after New York against evil mayor Walter Peck's better judgment.
Oh, why did they have to make Peck the mayor? I know. Anyway, yes. And Winston, we should say, is financing everything. So Winston's a big businessman now, and he is piling the money in to help the Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters.
So tell me, what did you think, Elaine?
We jump into that already.
Yeah.
I loved it. I really loved it. Okay, so I went into this knowing that the reviews had been awful.
Okay.
So I had already picked up Empire had given it 2 stars. I'd heard some other things as well. I'd seen even on podcasts that I listened to, the strap line for the episode title was, you know, how awful Ghostbusters Frozen Empire was and the box office and everything like that. So actually I went into it thinking, okay, I'm just going to keep an open mind, but I need to be ready for the fact that, you know, from the off, this is not going to be a good film. I'm going to be bored. I'm not going to enjoy the characters. And as soon as it started, and side note, I was one of 2 people in the cinema.
Wow.
Massive, massive screen. But as soon as it started, we were into the action. We were in New York. That of the, you know, the Ecto-1 was blaring. We were back with Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd and their kids. And, I, you know, there was a ghost and we were busting it. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm just really, really, like, wanting to come along with this one. But I thought, this is great. And then we're back at Hook and Ladder and there's Winston and, you know, there's an object. Oh, it's scary and spooky and we're going to find out about it. Someone's going to say something about an old language and then Ray's going to pop up and do his Ray thing from the occult store. And, you know, I genuinely just went along for the ride. At no point in time was I bored. It really reminded me of the original Ghostbusters in the way that it sort of had little scenes. So a little scene with ghosts that we may have seen before, a little scene at a library that we may have been to before, you know, lots of these little moments. There was one plot point which I thought I was struggling with, but actually it sort of came round in the end. I really like McKenna Grace's character. I thought it was really nice to see all the podcasts grown up a bit. I didn't recognise him. So nice to see these other characters who are inexplicably back in New York with them. You know, Lucky's popping up here. And I just liked it. I just really liked it. And I tell you what, the main thing was this thread of finding your teenage years difficult. That's one of McKenna Grace's thing. You know, like, you're partway through being a kid, being an adult, and Trevor Finn Wolfhard to say, I'm an adult, I'm 18, I should be able to drive the car. And you're in this partway world where you're a kid, but you're not a kid, and all of this sort of business, and you're trying to find out who you are. But also there's this other thread that goes through it about family and found family and people coming into your family. That really, really got me. By the end, I was crying, and I had to wait for the other person who was in the screen to leave so that I could not walk past them with my little tears down my eyes, down my face, not down my eyes, down my face. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Much like the TV that we've spoken about already, it's not going to change the world. It's not, you know, it's not a film that's going to be like my number one of the year, but I just went in there with an open mind, and I'm going to say it, Mark, an open heart. And I really enjoyed it. And I've been scared all the way home and this afternoon to hear your rant about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, but you may start it now.
Okay, I'm not
carry
gonna...
on. I don't give plan it your worst. Come on.
I fucking hated this film. I thought this was a film that was absolutely devoid of merit. In that, it's not even comically as bad as Madam Web. It's just there. I think McKenna Grace is a fine actress and she will go on to do great things. I think that very few else people in the cast, which is so overbloated it's not true, have anything to do in this film. Finn Wolfhard, who's a massive, massive star, is given a side project which is probably as important to the plot as Scrat getting the nut out of the ice in the Ice Age films. They've brought back Podcast and Lucky, given them, like, the first 10 minutes of this film, when we're introduced to everyone, feels like an episode of Saved by the Bell, where they go to on summer camp, or like to summer to work in a holiday resort, and each one's got a slightly different job, and it's like just one day, just okay, we'll have Lisa stopping with the family, we'll have Kelly and Slater being lifeguards, right, we'll have Zach working as entertainment host, we'll have Screech working in the kitchens, and Elizabeth Berkeley will just have probably front reception. Yep, right, let's go to lunch. If you had nothing to do with them, and I think the actress is a really, really like good presence on screen. I really like her. But Christ, Celeste O'Connor is her name. And I really, really would like to see her in something better than this. Because, I mean, she's also in Madam Web, which shows just how well she's doing this year.
Well, you might say that she's not had a great year. I think she's had a lovely time being in this great film.
But yeah, she's just literally nothing to do. Nothing at all to do. I had issues with things that they brought back for the first film, and now they've just doubled down on that. It has, and I don't think it's any surprise to say that the three Ghostbusters from the original, along with a couple of other people, turn up, and there is absolutely no reason for the majority of their screen time other than to be able to put them in the trailer to say, look who we got back, look who we got back. They range from can't be arsed performances to just absolutely the people who I've seen act just not putting in anywhere near the performance that you would expect from someone of their talent. And then as soon as you wound up that much, and funnily enough, I thought this all the way through, and then I listened to our review just to find out what I thought of the first one, and found the exact same thing again. Once you go there, every single thing annoys me. Like, little things which... little logic traps where it's like, how did that happen? How has that person got that suit with their name on it? Like that. Did they just have they had it for 30 years? 40 years? Nope. Someone's just took the time to... Well, New York City's under threat to go and carefully sew a nameplate with that character's name on it, because that's what they do. Yeah, I hope this is the end of this franchise. Because I have no desire to see any more of these characters.
Really? Not even the family. I mean, putting aside the older characters, and I do agree to a certain extent that, with the exception of Ray, and I like the fact that Winston's so successful as a businessman and he's bankrolling it. I really like that as a storyline for him. But and like I say, with the exception of Ray, who I think would be hanging around in Ray's occult, you know, in his store, and you would be going to see him as a source of knowledge, and I really like that little side part to him. I don't need to go into spoilers. I liked it right up until Dan Aykroyd
turned up and then tried to act.
And I thought he did a really good job.
I thought he was.
Murray, I think, is does not need to be there. And every time he popped up, I really did think, oh no, because he's definitely not doing anything there. And there was
he's made a career out of that uninterested performance. Yeah. And certainly when it relaunched his career with Lost in Translation. Mm. He managed to get a few years out of it, but fucking hell, it's worn off
now.
But
the new family, so even if you put aside the Augustus, but the new family, I really wanted to be with them more. I wanted to be with Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd and the kids, and I wanted to see them in the firehouse and see them busting more ghosts like the first 10 minutes. It felt to me, thinking about sort of cartoons, if we think back to X-Men, it felt to me like the animated series. It was the real nods, and atmospherically it felt like the real Ghostbusters, which was on round about the same time, and I really enjoyed that aspect
quite a lot
it.
Earlier, but yeah,
he was there. Okay. Yeah, yeah, well, you know better than me, but you know, that's that cartoony, you know, even with Trevor's Finn Wolfhard's sort of side project, it sort of felt like that to me, and I enjoyed being with them. I take it you didn't. You just didn't want to be with any of them.
I mean, so the opening scenes where they are rolling around New York, I just don't believe that you'll give a 15-year-old a laser gun that's able to tear things through.
You've got to sort of park your belief here and it's ghosts roaming around New York, you know.
Yeah, but you believe that a set of 30-year-old failed academics would do this, but having a 15-year-old child with it just borders on parody. Carrie Coon has nothing to do. One of the best actresses in the world, like absolutely phenomenal in
The Leftovers.
But even in like small things that she does, like in Gone Girl, I think she's really, really good in that.
Yeah, she's the sister, isn't she, in that? Yeah,
absolutely nothing to do. Paul Rudd gets a little bit to do. Like I say, Finn Wolfhard is... I have issues with how he always plays the same character.
Yeah.
But he is left to a side quest, which goes absolutely nowhere. And then Paul Rudd has a beginning, middle, and end to a storyline. But when I'm out of this film, that's not that did nothing for me. I think the big thing for this is that the original two films, and I mean, you're warmer on Ghostbusters 2 than me.
I am, yeah. But I love a sequel.
But they have at least comedy and horror.
Yes.
I laughed once.
Oh, I laughed throughout the entire film.
And I was scared precisely zero times.
I was scared a little bit, but I am a big scaredy cat. I think it could have gone harder on the scares.
And the only thing that I found anywhere near scary was the bit which is just a direct reference to, almost like taking the reels from the first film and just replaying them.
Okay.
Yeah, this didn't work for me on any level. I'm really glad it did for you, because I think you have more... Yeah. More skin in this game than I do.
Yeah, it's emotional connection to it.
I would watch Madam Web 10 times before I watch this again.
And I think that does play true in that if you didn't like Afterlife, you're not going to like this. It is very much an extension.
But I didn't go
that.
In thinking I wouldn't like it, but yeah, at least I'm consistent.
But you know, it is a consistent approach, yeah.
Can we talk about spoilers?
I mean, you can do.
Yeah.
I just have some really specific things that
really annoyed me about it.
Yes, right. Okay.
Probably.
Spoilers from this point on. Prepare yourself.
If you're leaving us here, go along and see it and make your own decision, because obviously we've got two very different sides of this review. I think I know where most people are going to be sitting, but...
all right.
But yes, thank you for listening. You can follow us at The Honeymoon Pod on Instagram and X, formerly known as Twitter. Yeah. And if you'd like to leave us a review, that would be much appreciated. But we'll see you next time.
Come on then. What else did you hate?
Well, I mean, Ray needs to be visited by the police.
I don't understand why you're so angry about little old Ray Stans
Dan Aykroyd. I think it was a really poor performance.
I really didn't. I totally
from someone
disagree.
Who I really admire, because he was born on the 1st of July.
Very much like playing Ray Stantz as an older retired man who wants to be, but you know, he's watching Ecto One flying past and that sort of wistful smile that I remember those days. He is, as they talk about in the original films, he is the heart of the Ghostbusters. He's got that sort of puppy dog energy. He knows so much. He's constantly sort of like chomping at the bit to get things going. And I think he played that out here. And then a lovely scene with Winston later on was like, you know, this is, we're meant to be retired. We're older now. And these are our golden years. I really enjoyed that bit about it. I did not see his acting.
For me, I didn't see that in the performances.
Okay.
So yeah, that didn't work for me. I mean, police should be visiting him after, because he is, because what? He's got a 15-year-old boy living in his basement.
I don't think okay, he might have.
Who has run away from home, told his parents that he's gone to space camp.
Okay, but yeah, I'm not all right. Okay, fair enough. In the real world, I can see that, but yes, okay.
Yeah, I just hated every minute of it.
I'm getting that impression, Mark.
I mean, we've not talked about the main plot centering around Phoebe. Mm. Yeah,
McKenna Grace's character Phoebe meeting a ghost in the park to play chess with, and we haven't talked about that because that is a big one,
yes.
and it runs through the whole of the rest of the film. Like I say, originally when I saw it, when I see her playing chess with this ghostly 16-year-old. I was like, I'm not too sure about it. It does link back to Afterlife because she can essentially see, everyone can see ghosts in this universe, but you know, you can see that she's got some sort of psychic connection.
And
to
she
her,
did play
her
chess
there.
With...
Yes.
With Egon. Ghost yeah. Egon.
Exactly. So yeah. You can kind of see that, and I wasn't sure where it was going, but I know you're going to come down hard on it, but I really liked the through, you know, that storyline of she is someone who has traditionally, you know, in these films, so the story goes that she has found it difficult to make friends and to form connections with other people, and she's coded autistic, and here she is, you know, having struggles with her family, going out the house, she's met someone that she's found a connection to, and yes, they're on a different spiritual plane, and she would like to see what it's like, you know, and I thought that rang true for that character. But I can understand that it's very cartoony, that it's, you know, I don't know, go on, tell me how bad it is.
No, your own words. I think it's distinctly average.
Mm.
I don't think that they had anywhere near the connection that would befit the start of the third act, her going, do you know what, I want to bring my soul out for 2 minutes in
yeah,
a move
enough.
That was... sorry, what? Mm. When did that come from? Like, you've got James Acaster in this, who's
yeah.
a really, really funny
yeah.
English comedian. He's not given anything funny to do.
I thought the whole film was funny. I laughed throughout the whole thing. I loved it. I loved the dialogue. I thought the dialogue was brilliant.
Really?
Yes, genuinely. Every time. We've forgotten the other guy who plays the Fire Master. What's his name?
Camille Nanjiani.
Yes. And a lot of it felt a little bit improvised, which often can go a bit wrong, but I thought the deadpanness of it was amazing.
Firemaster,
we're all
going to
die.
All like the gatekeeper.
Yeah, but of course. Well,
Lockmaster.
You know what? I was thinking about this on the way back because I thought you'd bring this up. But naturally, in folklore, these things reoccur. So masters and keepers and these things will naturally reoccur in... you're just looking at me now. You're looking at me.
Naturally reoccur in successive films.
Yes,
yeah,
they
yeah.
will. It is a folklore thing. Anyway.
It's like doing Indiana Jones and the Blemple of Gloom for
right.
instead of The Last Crusade.
But yeah, I found it, but I liked the denouement. I liked how, you know, striking of the match. I would have liked a little bit more about that character, like what happened to that character. I think I needed my sort of crime thriller brain wanted her to be the person that's almost a bit Sixth Sense-y, like, you know, her unfinished business might have had a bit more to it than just she was hanging around waiting for this person, this demonic entity to come and release her. yeah, I think it was a tenuous link, but I liked how it actually did link in, and it wasn't just that she was Casper the ghosting around.
But that's exactly what she is, Casper the ghosting. And I don't understand why you don't find that scary, but you find the thought of Casper the film.
I mean,
scary.
I did find her quite scary, the ghost girl. I didn't like it when she was floating at the window. I thought that was pretty creepy, and the whole, do you want me to come in? I don't like that. I'm very vampiric. So, yes. I mean, we're at completely different ends of the scale here. So we're just going to go round and round in circles. Is there anything else that you'd like to take apart before we finish?
I just found that, like, they introduced the concept and then paid it off within 2 minutes rather than actually lacing it through the film. Like, we introduced his fire bending powers to, like, 2 minutes before the end sequence.
There's lots of that is thread through, though. Whenever you see him, if you earlier on in the film, you see fire doing things near him, which I really like. I think that paid off well.
Okay. And also, his Camille's grandmother, had this thing which she put the ball in to stop it from breaking loose or whatever, brass and copper and stuff like this.
She had a secret cave thing.
No point did anyone think, oh, we should put the ball back in there then and leave it be.
No, I think it had gone a bit too far by then. Oh, they didn't know what it was. They were investigating it in their new secret Batman lair.
But it's little things like we see Phoebe chopping down the pole to melt down to create a new proton pack. 2 minutes later, everyone's just sliding down the pole.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that was edit was not great on that.
It just seemed really uncareful. Janine's got a perfectly pressed Ghostbusters
suit. I think she would have had a suit by then. You know, like,
would it have been there
years.
For
I don't know
40 years?
It might not have been there if she might have brought it with her.
Always just about one chance.
Yeah.
She took Rick Moranis's, she picked off his little thing.
That's
it. Put hers on.
Yeah.
Look, I'm really glad that you liked this.
Thank you.
Because I was quite fearful when I said, I think you should go see this.
Yes.
Because it'll be fun to talk about. That you were going to come back and go, you've just destroyed my childhood.
Yeah, no, I don't feel like that way about these sort of, you know, the renewal of the franchise. It's a bit like Jurassic Park for me. I can go and see the later sequels, and, you know, the new ones with Bryce Dallas Howard, and I can enjoy them although I enjoyed this much more, I can enjoy them to a certain extent and I can leave them alone. I feel more connection with these characters than I thought I would do, and I'm really happy about that. And I would like them to come back, but focus on them as the new Ghostbusters and see their exploits. I think Paul Rudd is just, I mean, Paul Rudd's brilliant, isn't he? And the scene with Carrie Coon where he does the, you know, the song, it's just lovely, and it's very heartwarming and knowing, and I like all of that sort of stuff.
It felt like a joke that had written in couldn't fit into the plot, so they just put a scene. Because that scene is completely separate to anything else that happens.
Yeah,
same with Trevor.
And Slimer.
Yes, and Slimer that's been introduced completely to sell toys. Because it's just, he has two scenes where he's trying to get him.
Yeah.
And then he's never seen again.
Yeah, it's fine.
You stay for the post-credits thing.
There's a mid-credits thing.
Yeah,
wasn't
sorry.
There?
Yeah.
I did.
Pointless.
And it was a bit pointless, yeah. I was hoping that it was going to be a setup for the next film, but
You didn't. I was glad it wasn't. Although, I mean, again, the Marshmallow Men have been brought in just to look,
just to be cute.
Gremlins. And
cute.
Yeah.
They've grown on me from the first one.
Absolutely no point in them being in the film, apart from to sell toys.
The Grumpasaurus.
Well, that's what this film does to me. This film makes me a sad person.
Well, it makes me very happy. I'm a happy, happy person, sort of singing my little Ghostbusters song, doing the dance, walking down the street. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Get my lunchbox out, you know. Bit of nostalgia. That's what I like.
Anyway, Bobby Brown's song from the second film is better than the Ray Parker Jr. original.
Oh, what's it?
On Our Own, is it? to take control. Gotta take.
I like that. I really like Ghostbusters 2. It's terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Like, that's really scary, I think, Ghostbusters 2. And it's got a nice theme through it about, you know, New Yorkers being a bit grumpy and then getting happier. A bit like you. Maybe we need to cover you in some happy slime.
I love the thing that I love about On Our Own, now that you've just said I'm with Grumposaurus, is that it's absolutely nothing to do with Ghostbusters until the rap in the middle where they mention they call the Ghostbusters and they take control.
I remember that now.
Had him throwing a party for a bunch of children, all the slime. Wallace was under the building, so they packed up the grip, got a grip, came equipped, grabbed the proton packs back off the back, and they split. Found out about Vigo, the master of evil, tried to battle my boys. That's not legal. And then back to the song that's completely about something different.
Lovely. Should we finish there, darling?
Let's finish there. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go see King Kong X Godzilla soon.
I heard someone call it King Kong Kiss Godzilla, and I wanted
I really want to see that film.
I really wanted to scream really loudly. I also keep hearing people calling Godzilla Godzilla, like pronouncing it Godzilla like that.
Like Godzilla.
But G-U-D, Godzilla, Godzilla. And it's driving me mad.
I hope it's a romantic comedy about King Kong kissing Godzilla.
Yeah, because it was Versus, wasn't it, the last one?
And yeah, now it's X in the way that modern musicians
Godzilla
do when they combine
King
with someone. Nowadays, it was just featuring.
Lovely. Yeah. So you're going to go and see that?
Yes.
Anything else you've got coming up? Civil War's coming out soon.
Civil War's coming out soon.
Which you are very keen to see, you were telling me the other day.
So are you, though, aren't you?
I am, but I'm a little bit nervous of it because it is America gone mad, and we've seen that happening already.
I've seen it in films before. I don't know quite what you're talking about.
I know.
I'm just looking at what's coming soon. So there is Monkey Man coming out next week.
Oh, yes, that's Dev Patel's directorial debut, isn't it?
Which, also, the first Omen's coming out, which has a virtually identical poster.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, just look at them two next to each other.
Oh, it really does. It's for those of you at home that aren't having a Mark showing you something on his phone, it's a doorway that's totally red and then a figure standing in it in shadow.
Twice.
Yeah, I tell you what I really would like to go and see, and I thought I really wouldn't, just while we're finishing off
just
talking about
hidden film. Away when everyone stopped listening.
Immaculate, which I saw the trailer for and thought, this isn't for me. It's clearly, as the title suggests, going to have a lot of pregnancy action in it.
Yes.
And that, for various reasons, doesn't necessarily make me feel great. And I do try to avoid, especially where it's sort of like pregnancy in peril. And this is Mad Nuns and pregnancy. So you would think there might be a bit of peril in there. But the reviews have been really good, and also mainly talking about the third act and saying that it goes to places that you just would never imagine.
This makes me want to
and
see it more.
And it makes me want to see it. It makes me want to sort of like put all of my sort of all my PTSD to one side and just go, okay, I'm just watching this for the artistic, where this has gone directorially and where this has gone storyline wise. I might wait until it comes out home end so that I can control it. So that if I find myself in a place where it's not the film for me, I can just walk away. Rather than when you're in the cinema, I think it's quite difficult to then sort of take yourself out of it. But yeah, I'm really, really intrigued because I thought it would be a bit of a throwaway horror, and this, like, the only reason I'm talking about it is because you reminded me about this, the first Omen. So there's a lot of horror coming out.
Do you know what film I'm looking forward to?
No, I have no idea.
I really want to see If.
Oh, If, which is Imaginary Friends.
Yes.
From the brain of John Krasinski.
I don't think he's done enough in filmmaking to earn that from the brain of John Krasinski.
From the mind of John Krasinski.
It's hardly
Krasinski.
Guillermo del Toro, is he? Like, or Terry
but
Gillingham.
Don't you think that, because Ryan Reynolds is in this, and the only reason I know about If is because I saw the trailer today for, I think, the third time.
Yes.
Don't you think Ryan Reynolds is sort of playing the John Krasinski character, and he's very not Ryan Reynolds in that. He's very calm Ryan Reynolds, isn't he? I think he's, you know, he's in a little suit and he's a quippy, but he's not Deadpool quippy. But it's, I mean, it's a kid's film, isn't it? So
I mean, you won't have seen Buried, will you? But he does do straight roles.
Okay. But I do feel he's playing, he's sort of channeling John Krasinski. I think he could have played.
Leave that in.
No. I think he could have played that role.
Okay.
Can we end now?
We shall see you next time.
Bye.